And welcome back to the Sundance Real. Leslie Thatcher and Barb Bretz here. And one of the films in this year's U.S. Dramatic category certainly has one of the most unusual names. In the studio with us is the director of Infinitely Polar Bear, Maya Forbes. Good morning, Maya.
Hello, good morning.
So can you just start with just the title? I mean, I don't get it. I haven't seen it, so I just don't even get this.
It's a hard ticket to get, Leslie. I've tried, so...
I can tell you about the title. Well, the movie is about is based on growing up with my father, who's manic depressive, and he took care of me and my sister for some time while my mother went away to get her business degree at Columbia Business School. And the title is when we were older, he managed to stay stable while he was taking care of us, and then when we were older and in college and not living with him anymore, he had a hard time staying stable. And one year when we were both in college, he had a manic episode, and we took him to McLean Hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts, to check him in. And he filled out his intake form, and it said, "What is your diagnosis?" He was filling it out. It said bipolar, schizophrenic, all these choices. And he checked other and wrote Infinitely Polar Bear.
Okay.
So that was his self-diagnosis.
So this is your directorial debut.
Yes.
You've got to be thrilled to be here, huh?
I am thrilled. I cannot believe it. It's been very exciting.
Well, and as Barb mentioned, I mean, we've been hearing some great things about it.
I really have. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, since I didn't get to be there, is it has to be really kind of overwhelming to preview or to screen your film in the Eccles Center, which is a pretty huge venue for a typical screening. What was that like?
The Eccles, it was the first one, and it was just to look out at all that sea of people. It was really overwhelming, and to have the response that we got.
A standing ovation, I understand.
Yes, we got a very long standing ovation. Actually, we got three standing ovations at different times, which was so, super exciting. I feel like I was in a bit of a dream world. You know, it's hard to remember. It seems like a dream, but it was really beautiful and overwhelming.
Yes. So when you were writing the film, I mean, yes. it came pretty easily to you?
No. I wrote this film for, I say 40 years, because it just is something that I lived and then I processed and then I wrote and then I thought about some more and then I tried to figure out how to make it not boring, entertaining, compress a longer period of time into a shorter period of time. I've been a screenwriter for about, 20 years and... this was the most personal. I wanted to write something very personal because I love 400 Blows, movies, Squid and the Whale, movies that are that are autobiographical and specific. And so there's only one way to do that, which is to write your personal story. I can't write somebody else's personal story. So I worked on this for a long time.
Yeah, so you think it's more difficult to write your own story, knowing that you lived it?
Well, it's difficult if you're – it's difficult to turn it into a movie that you hope will be entertaining.
My boring
and
life.
Capture all these different elements. I was trying to capture many different elements that families deal with, not just mental illness. My mother is black. I don't look black. My mother says I am unrecognizably black, which is, yes, how I feel. So I'm dealing with that as well, and I'm dealing with gender roles because it takes place in the 70s, and my mother was the breadwinner. My father, it was early for, now it's more common, but it wasn't as common back then for the father to be the caretaker.
And he's from a quite wealthy family as well, isn't he?
Yes, my father was from two very wealthy New England families. But we were very poor, and there were a lot of New England, in our family anyway, there were very complicated rules about money, things I still don't understand, but you were not supposed to ask for it. The people who had the money were very capricious and would sometimes give you something when you weren't asking because they liked to give you a little gift. But if you came and asked for it, you were always told, "We don't talk about money." Hmm. That was interesting.
Well, one of my questions, I mean, before I, 2 minutes ago was, it's like, well, how did you direct, Mark Ruffalo? I mean, but you actually knew exactly what to look for in that character, huh? Given that it was, you were directing your dad almost, right?
I did. I was looking for a combination of humor and heartbreaking understanding of pain, which Mark has. I was looking for someone very authentic and real, because I wanted to do mental illness as I remembered it, which was as a real person. It wasn't sort of kooky. It was a part of my father that was sometimes delightful and sometimes the opposite. So I felt that Mark really understood the range, and that the biggest thing I was looking for was warmth. I really wanted to make a movie that felt very warm, because it's about a family that really loves each other.
And he has that.
He's got it, and he's great with kids. He has three children of his own. He was wonderful with the girls. And yes, he has warmth.
How old were you before you understood that it wasn't just your dad, that your dad had an issue? I mean, when did it all make sense to you, his behavior?
Well, I guess, I mean, the first breakdown that he had that I remember was when I was 6 years old. And it was a pretty extreme breakdown. It's sort of the one that I use in the movie. The kids are a little bit older. Everything had to be compressed, because I didn't want to recast children. You know, in reality, probably this whole thing unspooled over 10 years. But in the movie, it has to
right.
3 years, you know. The biggest thing that my father did, I mean, I knew there was no way around it. I knew that he was mentally ill from that time when I was six, because we went and visited him in the hospital, which was one of the most painful experiences, is just to see somebody who's so destroyed by the medication, which at that time they didn't understand as well. I'm certainly not anti-medication for mental illness, but it was I think he felt quite like a guinea pig, and he at times seemed very devastated by it. And so that was a complicated relationship with the treatments that he was receiving, which didn't seem great. And then when I was about 13, my father said, "You don't have to not. You should." We were always hiding. My sister and I were always hiding the fact that he was manic depressive and embarrassed, and we wouldn't have people over to our house because it was a squalid pigsty. And then my father said, "You can tell people. You should not tell people, because that's who I am. It's what I'm dealing with." And that was very freeing. Once we started telling our friends, they loved coming to our house. They loved coming over.
And in a way, do you see that as a function of your movie as well? I mean, to kind of
destigmatize.
Put it out there?
I do. That is my hope. I feel that many, many families deal with these issues. And they run through, it's genetic. It runs through families. And I think it's something that I don't think people should be ashamed of it.
Yeah. Is your dad still around, and did he have an opportunity to see him?
No, he died in 1998, my father did. So my mother was here for the premiere and loved it. And my sister, who wrote the song over the closing credits, she's a singer, songwriter in a band called Pink Martini, but she wrote sort of a folk song for the end of the movie.
So, and your daughter has a role.
And my daughter plays sort of me.
I was going to say, who did you cast? Your daughter. Perfect.
I cast my daughter. I mean, that's sort of the wonderful things about independent films. They're sort of family affairs, because you just don't know when they're going to happen, and you have to pull it all together quickly. And my daughter had done a table read with Mark Ruffalo and Zoe Saldana a few years before we shot, and she'd been great. And so I felt confident that she could do it. And it was great to work with her. The biggest thing is, I know I could make her cry and I didn't have to feel guilty about it. I didn't have to go apologize to some other parent.
Well, again, Infinitely Polar Bear, you've got a couple more screenings as well in town today at 11:45, and again tomorrow at 2:30 at the Library Center. You'll also be in Salt Lake on Saturday. Any good news to report on anybody interested in the film?
We have lots of interest, and we're still working on it.
That's great.
Well, best of luck to you. Thanks for coming by this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Maya.
It's Maya Forbes, the director of the film Infinitely Polar Bear. You're listening to the Sundance Reel.
This is Michelle from Peak Art and Frame, proud supporters of KPCW. Locally owned and operated, Peak Art and Frame features local photography and artwork, as well as digital printing, custom framing, and mirrors. Open 7 days a week, rush service available, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801, peakartandframe.com.
Jan, I just don't know what to do.
Don, you're such a flake.
If only there were a show on Friday at 9 a.m. to fill me in on Frosty Weekend Fun.
I thought You knew. Warm up your weekend with Fun Friday.
Find out what to do, who to see, and where to go.
Don't be left out in the cold.
Tune in to Fun Friday for frostbite-free fun. Thanks to our jingly sponsors.
Zermatt Resort and Spa.
Homestead Resort.
Foothill Oriental Rugs.
Wasatch Pub, Squatter's Pub and Brewery.
And Summit County Business Directory. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.